Good day and welcome to this podcast on Liberation Day tariffs imposed by the U.S. President Donald Trump and the ripple effect that it has had on global markets. That is brought to you by PSG Wealth. Now, the tariffs have sent economic tremors through global markets, disrupting trade and prompting concerns about stability. Announced earlier this month on the 2nd of April, the sweeping levies of 10% up to 50% on over 100 countries have reshaped trade dynamics worldwide. Adrian Pask joins us and is going to help us to unpack how these tariffs are driving market volatility and provide insights on adapting investment strategies to mitigate risks and make informed decisions in this turbulent environment. Adrian is the Chief Investment Officer over at PSG Wealth, and I'm your host for today, Liwa Gavaza of The Business Day and Financial Mail. Adrian, greetings to you as always.
Hi, Madiba. It's good to be with you, and hello to everybody listening in.
Now, Adrian, just starting things off for today, maybe we can just take it down all the way to the most basic level. What exactly are these Liberation Day tariffs, and how did this come about? Why and how are we here?
Yeah, you know, I think that's the key question. I think, you know, where it essentially came from is the President of the United States following through on what he threatened to do in his campaign, and that's following on from his first presidency and sorting out tariffs. The President feels that the U.S. businesses in U.S. borders are unfairly treated through imported goods that are imported too cheaply, and then making those businesses uncompetitive from a U.S. consumer perspective. So essentially, U.S. consumers being able to buy up foreign products much cheaper than what the U.S. local producers can produce them at, and therefore curtailing industry growth, especially in the manufacturing sector. So to counterbalance that, the idea is to introduce some additional tax tariffs on these imports so that on a relative basis, these local producers are more competitive and they can therefore grow more successfully. So in theory, no problem with the logic, but as with all plans, it comes to execution where the most important part is, and unfortunately, the way that these have been rolled out is in a very rigid way with very little discussion, very little negotiation, and very little thought being applied to second and third round order effects. So therefore, markets have been quite surprised and quite volatile, and in some cases selling off quite aggressively.
Now, with everything that we're speaking about, Adrian, one of the biggest debates out there is whether the theory is going to trumpet out the reality in the markets to the point that you're making, that the logic makes sense, but the execution is something else. Some people have even criticized to say, was it the, you know, could there have been a phased approach to how these things are done, you know, maybe going country by country, region by region? But, you know, we're talking about sweeping implementation across the world. But if we zone in on South Africa specifically, where we are, maybe you could tell us a little bit more about, you know, what that trade between South Africa and the U.S. specifically looks like. How did that 30% tariff affect South Africa as a country?
I think it's important to understand sort of the context of the relationship. So South Africa's percentage of total U.S. imports is only 2.5%. On the other hand, the U.S. is quite an important trading partner for us. In fact, it contributes about 8.8% of our total exports. So you can see how the scale of the U.S. economy is at play. They are quite material consumers to most countries, and that's really the part that Trump feels is unfair. But if you look at the actual numbers, South Africa's exports to the U.S. reached $13 billion, and it's about 2.1% of the country's GDP. And if you look at how it's composed, it's 98% of that is either manufacturing or mining sectors. And if you could take even one level even further down, is if you look at the manufacturing space, for example, because a lot of focus has been placed on aluminium and steel tariffs, which is the central pieces of the US policy changes, those sectors contribute roughly 30 basis points of South Africa's GDP. So, you know, we obviously stand a lot more to lose than what they do. Retaliation doesn't make quite sense. And we have to think about how this might affect the industries on the ground. So if you look at it, if you consider, for example, the 25% tariff on vehicles that I mentioned, you keep in mind that 97% of all the X3 models that are sold in the United States are produced in South Africa. So if there's now a tariff applied to that, it makes those vehicles more expensive. And the hope is that US consumers will then buy other vehicles that are manufactured locally. And that's really the hope. So you can see how the logic works, but I think we should also keep in mind that it's not as simple as just adjusting prices and then consumers use different products. In some cases, they use those products because they are just simply more affordable, and making them more expensive will mean that, yes, either they pay a higher price for that exact same product or they pay a higher price for another product that now seems more competitive. But either way, they're paying a higher price, which means we're talking about inflation. And if we see a rise in inflation because of these tariffs, we'll see higher interest rates, which then hits back on the consumer. So the first loser in this situation is always going to be the US consumer. You know, they're paying higher prices for their products because of tariffs, and it will be inflationary and have an impact on interest rates. So we've got to be really, really careful. It's not as simple as just raising taxes.
It certainly is not as simple as simply raising taxes. I believe there is a sage African saying which says, when elephants fight, it is the grass that suffers. And right now, to the example that you've given, these trade wars that are happening on a national level, it almost feels as if that's on the macro, but on the micro level, it is the consumers, to your point, that are suffering when it comes to, I guess, how these things are going to be implemented and how things actually pan out on the ground. But if we look beyond South Africa, then, Adrian, how are these tariffs affecting other countries, including those that are in Asia?
Yeah, I think the key thing is we're disrupting confidence with these discussions. So, you can imagine if you're thinking about starting up a business in the United States or starting up a new business that will export product into the United States, you're definitely not thinking about that so hard anymore, or definitely not thinking about doing it just yet. So it sort of keeps people at bay from continuing to invest. So it creates a bit of a stutter around economic growth. And those distortions are quite concerning. I think more broadly, what we have seen is sentiment towards the US as a brand is starting to turn. So this is also part of the interesting piece of the investor psychology and consumer psychology. If you look at some of the speak that's coming out from some of the multinational US producers, if you think about businesses like Nike, for example, these businesses are concerned that consumers won't buy their product in the fear that you don't really want to be associated with US brands anymore. So there's all sorts of interesting things coming out there. And then politically, Trump's ratings amongst the U.S. population, the U.S. voter, even Republicans amongst his fellow global leaders across the globe, all those relationships are deteriorating. So there's large-scale impacts all around the globe. But it's interesting to see some of the reactions beyond SA. We know China has been the focal point of the tariff discussion. To my mind, I think that it's likely more than just tariff and being fair around tariffs. I think this overarching topic of who will be the global leader in 10 years' time. And we've got to remember that whoever enjoys global dominance enjoys many other benefits. Think about things like reserve currency, being able to set prices on a large scale, those kind of things. So I think the US is also trying to keep its dominance intact and is threatened by China and the growth that China is experiencing, and looking 10 years into the future, what that might lead to. But more in the short term, if we think about what we've seen out of the European Union and their response is, they'll target aluminium and steel imports with broader measures that's set to be enforced by the end of April. And the EU is facing a 20% tariff from the US. Canada-US tensions are escalating quite a bit, and we've seen the retaliation from Canada, and they've been threatening to take even further action. And then you get other countries who seem to follow a more moderate approach. So in the UK, they've said they want to negotiate. Japan, South Korea, much the same. Australia has been quite vocal around criticism about US tariffs. However, they haven't announced any retaliation measures just yet. And then you get some more cooperative type of views. Taiwan, for example, say they're very keen to engage with the US to see how they can remove trade barriers more broadly. So looking at more than just tariffs, let's look at how we can bilaterally improve trade volume for both countries more broadly. And India has sort of communicated a similar message saying that they want strategic alignment with the US. And then I think the most interesting one was out of Vietnam, where they have actually offered to reduce the tariffs on US goods to zero, and they are sending diplomats to Mar-a-Lago to discuss those solutions. So a lot of different responses from the various affected parties.
A lot of various and different responses, Adrian, like what you're pointing out, to a lot of, I'm just going to call it stimuli. There's a lot of stuff that's happening, in the market, lots of things all happening at one time, not only from the number of tariffs that are being thrown out, the number of countries to whom some of these tariffs have been imposed, but also some of the reactions, the stances from the different nation states. There's all of that that's happening that you're pointing out. But at the same time, you then have President Trump then throwing in a twist, announcing a 90-day pause on many of the new tariffs. But at the same time, China still facing that staggering 145% tariff rate, which quickly rose from 125. How should or could people be making sense of all of this noise that's in the market? I think you and I have spoken a number of times about, sometimes market players have to work to sort of cut out the noise to actually see what's important or, what to actually focus on.
Yes, I think, essentially, tariffs is something very specific, but more broadly, people are concerned about the same thing. The same things that they've been worried about on and off for many, many years. They worried about politics. They worried about inflation. They worried about potentially higher interest rates, the impact on global growth and recessions. And they've been worried about the same set of things, as I say, for a long period of time, but normally it originates from different places. Whether it's COVID that introduced those pressures or whether it's Trump administration introducing those pressures, they are always around. It seems to me sometimes that investors are waiting for the perfect investment climate. And the reality of it is it will never come. There's always something to worry about. And business cycles are cyclical by nature. And it's only a matter of time before you go through a recession. You can't just grow indefinitely. Things just don't go up in a straight line. And markets respond to that, and they are equally cyclical. And nothing will ever change that. We go through the specifics, and these things worry us, and we talk about politics and this and that. But at the end of the day, these things won't change. This is the nature of markets. So I think it's one of those things that we've got to accept the characteristics of investing long term. Investing long term will be characterized by many concerns. And on that journey, if you invest for 10, 20, or 30 years, you're going to see multiple recessions. You're going to see multiple bouts of higher inflation. You're going to see multiple interest rate cycles that are either very high or very low. And if you can come to grips with that and understand that this is the journey you embark on when it comes, I think you're much better equipped to deal with them. If these things catch you by surprise, you haven't really done the mental preparation to put yourself in a position where you can navigate them properly. So I think from an investor perspective, for the man on the street, if you want to put it that way, I think it's just understanding what you're getting into when you're on a long-term journey. But that shouldn't really deter you from doing it, because that journey can be really rewarding over the long term. I mean, the long-term return out of equities, even South African equities, has been 13% per annum, which is well ahead of inflation. And they are up and down, but you make a very good return. And that's ultimately the growth engine of your portfolio over time. So I wouldn't get too distracted by these things. I think it's more important that you invest in a disciplined way, continue to invest, think about the long term, appreciate that these things happen over the short term. And as for the nitty-gritty of which asset classes or equities to allocate to, my honest opinion is leave it to the experts. We often see people get involved in those things, and it takes training, specific training to navigate a situation like that. And if we look at our set of portfolios and portfolio managers, they dedicate their working days to making sure that our clients are protected. And through the cycles, they are very disciplined, and they use these opportunities to buy into stocks that we think are unfairly being punished and will offer good long-term returns in spite of what we might see over the short term. So I think those factors, I think, are really important to keep in mind during a period like the one we see at the moment.
Adrian, I really like the fact that you mention that over the long term, there tends to be an upward trend in a number of these markets. I think you singled out, South African equities returning 13%, which is well ahead of inflation. And when someone looks at a chart, whether it's a currency chart, a stock market chart, and you see the up and down movements, I think sometimes we almost disconnect between the reality and what's actually being looked at on paper. To say the reality is that when you see those peaks and troughs, what we're going through right now would be characterized as a trough, but it's the ability to stave off, some of these things and just focus and invest in a disciplined way, like what you said, cut out the noise and know that you're here and you're going to stick to your position for the long term, or make adjustments that are geared towards the long term, as opposed to just simply reacting to some of that the short-term pressure. So it is an interesting one. You and I have spoken quite a bit about the psychology of investing, and it almost feels as if this moment that we're in right now is a perfect case study into how investors, at least on the in the professional sense, could weather out certain storms as and when they do come out. But if we do focus on the short term for a moment, Adrian, one of the most obvious short-term factors that people need to consider is this 90-day pause that has been announced, which we alluded to earlier on. How do you see that affecting the countries? Do people just sit, wait out the 90 days? Do they run around and ship a million iPhones in and out? How do you see things playing out there?
I think it's going to be interesting. On a company level, you see people doing various things depending on where they may have built up stockpiles in various areas around the globe. I think it's a very tricky situation for most companies to try and navigate, because for all the Trump administration might announce that they declare victory, they've negotiated better terms with everybody, but they're not nearly as severe as what was signaled a week ago. So that's a possibility. So you don't want to do anything too drastic. And there might be some situations where the narrative changes completely. So People were incredibly worried about Apple, for example, given that, where they manufacture their phones in the Asian economies and how that would affect the tariffs on their products. And then we saw a later announcement saying, no, the tariffs are a no-go for computers and chips and those kind of things, which then turns the whole thing on its head. So I think it is really tricky to determine how this is going to land over the short term. The best thing you can probably do is say, maintain a well-diversified portfolio of assets. This is not the time to take big stakes into specific companies. It's in my view, not the right time for passive investing. You need to be active. You need to be able to be in a position to be flexible around announcements and adjust portfolios if you need to. And for the various countries, I think the only thing that you can really do is negotiate and see where those negotiations go. And I think, even for the countries that wanted to retaliate, they've got opportunity to negotiate. I don't think anyone would be foolish not to try and negotiate. You want to open dialogue and see if you can find a diplomatic solution that can benefit both parties or be implemented in a way that won't affect the global economy or specific industries or sectors in a negative way. That being said, I doubt very much whether 90 days is sufficient to go through all this negotiating work and research work to make an informed decision. And it comes back to what Trump's real intention is. Some days I'm not sure he has a specific plan. I think personally, the capitulation on the reciprocal tariffs was largely based on the fact that the bond market reacted very negatively, which is very detrimental for the US. And I think he had to jump in and respond and reverse whilst still trying to save some face. But then again, that's my opinion, and no one knows for sure. So we're in for an interesting time. It's going to be turbulent. We saw exactly the same thing in his first presidency. Markets were up and down all the time, largely range bound. I think the key differentiating factor this time around, though, is that the US markets are a lot more expensive going in. So there isn't a lot of margin of safety on some of those stocks. So it's really is time to be super careful. And I would be thinking of diversifying into to other areas that offer good margin of safety on valuation without compromising too much on the growth prospects. I think it's really important to invest in businesses that can grow at a reasonable price and are able to adjust to whatever comes their way. And I think, contrary to many people's belief, I think there are fantastic quality businesses in South Africa that are largely unaffected by these tariffs, that are paying attractive dividends and are not expensive. So, yeah, I think there are opportunities, but you need a trained eye to go through this process.
All right. So, where we want to end off today's discussion is obviously we've spoken quite a bit about all the uncertainty and temptation to react emotionally, and I think that was well covered and well captured about some of the practical steps that investors can take right now to stay on course. And you've also given us some insight into how investors could be maybe rebalancing their portfolios, or some of the areas that people could be investing in, just to weather things out in terms of how they're allocating. But sometimes one of the things that one notices is that there tends to be a difference between what the market should be doing at a time like this versus how things actually play out. You've just given us some insight into some of the areas that investors could be allocating their capital just so that they stay on track and they can weather this out. But how do you actually see those portfolios actually playing out, during this time? Do you think it will sort of go according to what you've just guided, or do you think there might be some element of panic that will set into certain corners of the market, drive up certain things unreasonably there?
I think, markets are famously irrational over short periods of time, and I'm very much someone that relies on logic to navigate my way through. So there's a bit of an immediate disalignment from that perspective. But what I can say is that now over longer periods, markets tend to follow the natural path in terms of where earnings are going. I think, over the short term, it's very, very possible that we can see a recession now. Should investors completely disinvest from their portfolios and try and avoid that? I don't think so. It's very difficult to, I mean, we hear this all the time, very difficult to time the market, but it's true because at first you need to decide when are you getting out. Think about investors in 2022 when interest rates were moving from 25 basis points to over 500 basis points in the US. That's very clear evidence that you should be thinking carefully. And if someone was to take money out of the equity markets, you would say, well, he's got a very good reason to do that. But then you look at what markets did in the year 2023 and 24, and that investor would have missed out. So markets have a way of surprising you. And the best thing that you can do is just accept that markets are volatile and rather stay invested. Because as soon as you start tinkering too much and you're in and out and you expect a setback now and a recession there, then you're overcomplicating things. And I think the majority of investors get that wrong. I think the fact that most professional investors don't endeavor to accomplish that goal or go down that journey already says quite a lot that it's probably not a good idea. It's probably not a attainable goal. The fact that you can time market tops and bottoms perfectly is a bit of a mirage. I don't personally believe in that. But as for review, I wouldn't be surprised if we see turbulence continue. I won't be surprised if we see a recession. I think the probabilities are quite evenly poised. There's certainly a risk that we might see that. And I think we could see US stocks sell off if we see earnings pull back and estimates not being met. And I think that's been our view even before we were talking about tariffs. But that being said, there's always something that you can invest in. There's always businesses that distinguish themselves. There's businesses that can grow in spite of turbulence. There's businesses that are attractively valued in spite of broader markets maybe being more expensive. And then there's other asset classes that do well in periods of uncertainty. I mean, we look at what gold's doing at the moment. Many of the fund managers that we use have deployed some gold in their portfolios as a protective measure, and that seems to have worked quite well. Much better than trying to disinvest from all your equities is trying to add some counterbalances in your portfolio, things that can help you if things don't work out over the short term. They can at least buffer you a little bit, I think is a more reasonable approach.
And that's how we end off today's discussion. It has been a great one, just understanding what's going on in the markets with all of these tariffs. Tariff talk seems to be everything that is shaping the markets right now. A lot of confusion, a lot of policy directives, a lot of reactions, a lot of responses happening at the macro level, a lot of impacts in the markets, whether we're talking about equities, whether we're talking about fixed income. We have seen all of this playing out within a very, very, very short space of time. Now, one of the key things that Adrian was just talking about is that in the short term, there tends to be, some panic that does set in, and there will be some volatility. There will be a lot of mistakes made, but over the long term, the market tends to almost correct itself and work in the best possible direction that is efficient and that does well for everyone. Also, just a good understanding, these tariffs, where did they come from? Where are we now? What's the logic behind them? And, Adrian just talking about the fact that the logic makes sense. However, the execution and how things actually play out in real life is usually very, very different from what the textbook or what the theory would have people believe. And I think a little bit of that is already being seen. In a traditional sense, when there's some of this panicking, you don't tend to see your fixed income and your equities all coming down at the same time. One rises as the other comes down. But in this particular instance, you have both feeling the pressure, at least something unexpected happening. And as investors, people have to sit and take all of this in stride. Adrian just advising that people just sit down, look at the fundamentals, look at the direction that things are going in, just see how things are actually going to play out and, try and cut out the noise. So that's been it for this discussion, just based on what's going on in terms of the Liberation Day tariffs imposed by U.S. President Donald Trump and the ripple effect it has had and it is having on global markets, brought to you by PSG Wealth. I've been your host, Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. Thank you so much to Adrian Parsky, who is the Chief Investment Officer over at PSG Wealth, for his insights into what's going on in the market. That's how we end off. Remember that you can subscribe for free episodes on iono.fm, Spotify, Player.fm, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your podcasts.